Rohan Jayarajan. My co-moderator is Susan Pitt over here. We're so excited to have you all at this session. PS130, so social media and surgery, semicolon, best practices. I am really thrilled with the number of people we have here today. We want to make this interactive, and I think the interesting part about this is that we have some generational representation, me being the old generation that doesn't know what Twitter is and still uses email, and we've got great representation across the panelists today, including some dissenters as far as use of social media. This topic came up as a topic of potential discussion for this forum through several groups within the American College of Surgeons. We began this when Dr. Todd was chair of the pillar of the Board of Governors for the communication pillar, and we felt that this was an important topic to take up. So we were lucky enough to join with the YFA, which is a Young Fellows Association, and the Ethics Committee to actually co-brand this today and to look at something that I think is very timely when appropriateness and use of social media is really being defined. As such, we've put together a really great set of speakers today that will talk about different aspects of this. We'll have some time for discussion at the end, and we really want you to engage in discussion. We built that into the program so that we could really talk through some scenarios that may affect you or that you've come across personally. I'm a hepatobiliary and foregut surgeon in Dallas area. I provide some diversity in many ways, including my practice diversity. I am in more of a private practice model or a hybrid model, so hopefully that will provide some diversity. I'm also wearing a purple suit, which makes me diverse. So. We are going to start. My co-moderator is Susan Pitt, who's an endocrine surgeon at the University of Wisconsin, and I'm thrilled to have her with us today. Thank you so much. Without further ado, let me call on Dr. Soliberg, who is at Baylor College of Medicine. He's an endocrine surgeon and has done much work in the area of social media. We did toy with the thought of not introducing anyone and just saying, look at their Twitter handle, but we thought we'd better say a few words. So James, thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you. So for those of y'all who need to find my Twitter handle, it's there. It's very straightforward, at J Soliberg. For those of y'all who don't know what Bitmoji is, it's that caricature of me saying hello, and you can download that app if you'd like. It's a really nice app. Some of you in the audience no doubt have that going already. I was asked to, let's see, here we go. So I have no disclosures. This is going to be a quick whirlwind through practice growth and reputation, patient education and professional knowledge. We're going to tackle patient education first. First of all, it's very important that you be aware that patients are online, patients are out in social media. The peer-to-peer relationship that social media allows for patients with like diseases to connect with one another has a lot of benefit, but also leaves patients sort of vulnerable to unsupervised communication and unsupervised dissemination of care plans. So the MD perspective can change from beneficial to harmful depending on where the patient is on that continuum. The main thing that I want to emphasize to this audience is that it is very important to be engaged and understand that your patients are online and in social media trying to learn about their disease processes. If you look on Facebook, for the hernia support group on Facebook, you can find immediately one that comes up, and that has 2,400 members in it. I'm an endocrine surgeon, and so I am actually an administrator or a moderator of an online parathyroid disease support group that has 6,300 members in it. Also, there are, for rare diseases, or not so rare diseases, there's online groups like Patients Like Me. This is a fascinating study where the online support system of Patients Like Me was actually used to track patient-centered outcomes for a novel agent used to treat ALS. They were actually able to in the span of about 12 to 14 months, conduct an online virtual randomized trial to determine whether a novel agent had any benefit for these ALS patients or not. Like I showed on the previous slide, that publication actually made it into one of the Nature journals. At the end of the day, the trial actually showed that there was no benefit in reducing patient-reported outcomes for that agent. Took what probably would have taken a decade of formal randomized control trial studies and millions of dollars, and was accomplished by the patients in this community within about 14 months. Likewise, patients can certainly be vulnerable to disinformation spread across Facebook. So I'm an endocrine surgeon, so I typed in thyroid nodules into the Facebook search engine, and here's some nice stuff on indeterminate thyroid nodules with appropriate medical literature. But unfortunately, what comes up here is something called clickbait, and that looks really nice. 12 cures for thyroid nodules. So for the fun of it, I decided to click on it, and immediately it brought me to a webpage that was selling vitamins for this, that, and the other, but looks very sort of business formalized. And you scroll through it, and they're really just trying to get vulnerable patients to buy stuff. And if you're facing possibly needing surgery and a scar on your neck, you're going to do whatever you can do that's within your power to stop that. So patients actually pay attention to this. Sort of at the bottom is the tabloid. I thought it fascinating that bamboo plant is advocated as a cure for your indeterminate thyroid nodule by these. In terms of education for your patients, there's no question that the best patient education is going to be multimedia education. We take advantage of YouTube as a dissemination agent to get videos out for our patients that cover sort of the introduction, what to expect. Social media is multimedia and therefore makes it very easy to generate content. If you are not good at generating content, you should recognize that American College of Surgery already has very well-developed content, and Strong for Surgery even has a Facebook page. What type of content should you be covering? Things such as what to expect, how to prepare for that clinic visit, the concept of post-op normalcy. Patients are fascinated post-operatively as to whether they're normal or not. And so when you look in these online communities, they all want to figure out, is this normal? I'm not sure. How am I doing it? Why don't you call your doctor? Well, unfortunately, the communication just isn't there. It's so much easier in our now society to throw this out digitally and get a response in 5 minutes. Again, American College of Surgery has outstanding patient education resources. These are multimedia. They have YouTube content. They have PDFs that you can download. Everything is appropriate health literacy certified. Everything has the appropriate diagrams and figures that are necessary if you're going to have appropriate patient education materials. So let's switch gears now and talk about professional knowledge. Social media absolutely is a part of my ongoing professional benefit and my source of staying up to date with the literature. I learn stuff every day from looking at my Twitter feed. It's a great way to disseminate the research and knowledge that you are involved in generating. And it also is very important in maintaining your online reputation, which everything is about reputation and brand online, and we'll have some more on that later. In terms of education, all the major journals now have Twitter feeds. There is the ability to use Twitter to generate your own list, so you can add the journals to a list on Twitter. You can simply, instead of going through all those different followers or the big, giant, massive Twitter feed, you can just scroll through that list and instantly get updated on the abstracts that are being put out in the journals that you keep up with. I found this extremely efficient in terms of my time management. If it's something that I want to save, I simply hit a button, it gets sent to my email and archived for reading later on. So it's very, very efficient for me. There's been online journal clubs. Members of this audience have participated in the International General Surgery Journal Club. And journals absolutely are keeping track of the alt metrics in terms of how they're being shared and viewed throughout social media. There's no question this is here to stay. Something that's come about in the last couple years has been the development of the visual abstract, and I really, really love this project. Members of this audience have taken advantage of this in the exact way they should, displaying the visual abstracts of your work on your practice webpage. It allows you to build your brand, showing all the fact that you're a leading institution in that area, and is easy to read, and patients are going to pick up on it. So this is really something that's new in the last year and a half, 2 years, and is absolutely fantastic. For more information on this, Andrew Ibrahim has a primer on creating visual abstracts, and this is really the wave of the future as far as online dissemination of your content, and that future is now. All the various professional societies of the college have Facebook websites. You can get the latest up-to-date information on your professional society. I've included it here such as the YFA, the RAS, and of course, the American College of Surgeons home Facebook page. So let's get into practice growth and reputation. Twitter is for real. The one thing that I can tell you about social media is that surgeons love data, and social media is all about data. This is the data from Twitter from the last couple years, the American College of Surgery. Who knows where we'll be at this year? And the key when you start looking at using social media for practice growth is to leverage multiple channels. All right. In terms of the difficulty level, beginner level is Facebook and Twitter. I'm going to go through a couple of examples of that. Intermediate, you want to have a blog or a LinkedIn profile. And then finally, expert level is to incorporate Instagram, especially if you are in a specialty that has a lot of visibility to it, such as plastics or reconstructive surgery. And then finally, YouTube. And YouTube is really can be a little bit laborious to create the video content, but also it's done very easily if you just keep it very simple. Snapchat, I've omitted it from this list. In my opinion, it's got limited reach and ability to network, and so I've eliminated it from this list. So I mentioned the parathyroid Facebook group. So I have a new partner that's joined us at Baylor. He moved from University of Chicago. And in order to get the message out about him coming and practicing in Houston, we identified the Facebook group as an opportunity to conduct a Facebook Live Q&A session. We picked a time to do this with the administrators of the group. And then we held the event. So we basically went online live with my iPhone and answered questions from a 6,000 patient online community about parathyroid disease. So we put up a little PDF primer, just built this in PowerPoint, and this was the best bang for our buck we could get in terms of marketing. So look at the analytics. 5,500 people reached, 233 engagements, and 1,000 click-throughs. That was for 45 minutes of our time. Imagine how much we'd have to shell out in the department budget to get marketing to go reach 5,500 people. All right. So this was real, and this absolutely works. Twitter allows you to be publicized and recognized as a thought and practice leader. You can take advantage of some of the features of Twitter to get geography down to the city and the content. You do that through hashtags, and it's easily automated. So while I'm sitting here talking to y'all, I've got software posting tweets for me right now. All right, so I'm tweeting while I'm talking. Anatomy of a tweet. I'm not going to really get into how to set up your Twitter account today. Hopefully, if you do need that assistance, most institutions have social media offices now. They'll be more than happy to do that for you. The first step is simply, it's kind of like going to AA. The first step is saying that you need help. But this is a part of modern culture. So here's an example of a great tweet from Andrew Ibrahim. So we've got his handle. That's just his name. And then we have, he's got some hashtags in here that brands the topic that Twitter searches through. He's retweeting somebody else who's quite prolific, and you increase your visibility through the use of this. This is my partner, Ray. Ray had no idea how to use social media when he moved to Houston. So our social media office and myself worked with him to give him a primer on it. And this is sort of a great example of it. Surgeons, at least where we are, we're not used to bragging about our work. We're humble, we work hard, we are proud of our results, but it feels kind of weird to brag about your work. So here's a great way that you can sort of spin that, and that is humbled or privileged to have participated in writing this book. He's tagged some prominent societies of endocrine surgery, as well as ASCO. He's got a couple institutions tagged, and we've got the title of his book that he put out. So that's sort of a role model exemplar for getting a nice tweet out to take credit for the work that you're doing. Again, same thing from the OR, showing nice pictures from the OR. No patient identifier information, everything HIPAA compliant, no issues with that, and tagging multiple societies with some very nice graphical representation. So how about growth and control of reputation? So you have a digital footprint, whether you know it or not, and whether you're going to really buy full into social media or not, it's important that you at least have some presence and you have some monitoring of it. You need to control your own brand. And I'm going to go through an example that I just did. Rob Todd is going to give a talk later on here about why he's left social media and he's out of it. Rob is my partner at Baylor, and I vetted everything with Rob, but I'm going to show you guys what can happen in just about 15 minutes time if you don't own your own brand. So, you are subject to alternative facts. So I looked for Rob on Facebook, and he does have a presence on Facebook, so that's good. He's very well traveled, you can see. He's on Twitter, looking very thoughtful there on Twitter. But is Rob Todd on LinkedIn? And I guess what? Rob Todd was not on LinkedIn. So this is me in the hotel room last night. And scrolling through. And all of a sudden, I can use the advantage of social media to connect with all these different people and instantly create a fake network. Rob's a trauma surgeon. He leads our trauma program at Baylor. He is an outstanding trauma surgeon. He is a leader of surgery in America. But if I was an ER physician, I may not like that. So you could probably take advantage of that. So I created a Facebook page called Surgeons for ER Docs. And I just put in Rob's name and everything. And if you guys have your Facebook channel open right now, you can go ahead and search for this if you'd like. It's going to go down as soon as we finish this this talk, but you can search for this page, and let me show you how easy this is to do. So then you just click, oh, test page, link, learn more about Surgeons for ER Docs. And where does that bring us? Well, that brings us to Rob's LinkedIn page that I created for him. And look at the statement I got here. Critical emergency trauma patients should be managed by emergency physicians. Emergency patients stay cared for by emergency physicians. Surgeons for ER Docs. All right, this took me literally 10 minutes, but wait, it gets better. Boost this post and reach 15,000 people for $20. All right, so if you didn't see the news and somehow we're living in a hole for the last year in the meddling, this is real. So I'll show you the screenshots of what Facebook will let you do. So you can spend $100 and reach 35,000 people. You can select what areas they want. You can select what geographies you want to reach in. And that's it. And you can put that information out there in literally 20 minutes. Okay? So hopefully anybody in here who sort of didn't understand the importance of brand management and online reputation presence in social media, hopefully I've given you a reason now to at least register a page and at least maintain a page somewhat so that you don't get caught up in something like this. You have to be engaged with it in today's digital modern era. Critical rules, always HIPAA. And finally, if you wouldn't say it at the dinner table, don't say it on social media. Thank you.